Hello, I'm Rob Reiford. This is number 0519 of the Stuff File program with my old buddy Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0519. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Andrew Alleman from PodcastGuest.com on companies marketing themselves with a podcast.
I think they should think about what their goals are, and I think a big goal of any company is to connect with their customers, and a podcast is a great way to do that, because right now a company, when they connect with their customers, a lot of times, well, email is the most direct kind of push medium there, and people get a lot of email, just so much that they can't keep track of it. And so podcasts are a way to have a long format discussion with customers.
Paul J.J. Payak from the Global Language Monitor is back to talk about the trending words for 2019. How do they determine what gets on the list?
We use every database we can, and what we're talking about is global English, not American English or Canadian English, but what's going on with the English language worldwide. And then we see what's moving inside the databases. So in other words, if we did what's the most frequently used word in the world, every year would be okay. Okay, okay, okay. That's the most frequently used English word in the world. But we're not doing that. We're talking about what's trending, what's making a difference, what's consequential in language.
Mary Wynne Lent on homeschooling. It doesn't have to be a daunting path for the parents.
They don't feel academically or emotionally prepared for this undertaking. They need to be assured that they don't have to have an education degree to be able to do this. All the curriculums will definitely lead them in how to apply this to their child, and this information we have today is just fantastic to teach you how to do it.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0519, was voiceover specialist Rob Reifert, a good pal of mine. He is the international voice for Doritos, and he does tons of radio imaging right across the globe. You can visit his website at robreiford.com, and Reiford is spelled W-R-E-F-O-R-D. That's robreiford.com. You can also check out his Facebook page, which is Rob Reiford Voiceover Artist. That's facebook.com/robreifordvoiceoverartist. Thank you very much, Rob, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Okay, regular listeners to this show already know how I feel about cats. They're evil. Little pieces of evil plotting against mankind. Over the years, I have given you many reasons why this is true. This is merely the latest one. A man in Bangkok, Thailand, was left shocked when he discovered what his adorable cat was doing while he was sound asleep. It all started when the pet owner found himself struggling to breathe at night and was determined to get to the bottom of his problem. So he decided to set up a camera in his bedroom to find out what was happening. But when watching the footage back, he discovered something completely unexpected. It turns out his feline, named Achi, had a habit of climbing on his face while he was out for the count. Three photos shared on Twitter shows his cat staring at him in the dark and then proceeding to lie on his face. Yeah. Mark my words. One day that cat will win. All cats will win. I've been warning people of this for years. But they won't heed my warnings. Sadly, they'll all find out when it's too late. Yes. FBI agents have reportedly found buckets full of heads, arms, and legs, as well as refrigerated heaps of male genitalia and different people's body parts sewn together while working on a case concerning illegally trafficked body parts. The officers made the sickening discovery, described as a horror story, at a science lab in Arizona. The Biological Resource Center in Phoenix, a body donation and tissue bank facility, is being sued by 8 families. The FBI followed a paper trail leading to the center run by owner Stephen Gore. Well, he seems to be aptly named, which they said was profiting from dismembering and selling remains without donor consent. Agents said the bodies had been dismembered with chainsaws and bandsaws. They also described the site of a small woman's decapitated head, which had been sewn onto a large male torso, like Frankenstein, and hung up on a wall. The creation is reportedly referred to as a morbid joke in the lawsuit. Yikes. You know, I'm surprised they didn't take 5 of the heads and try to create Newton's cradle. Yeesh. The Sarasota County, Florida Sheriff's Office says 38-year-old Justin Richardson was taking apart a 9mm pistol when it discharged, shooting him in the abdomen. Richardson has 10 prior felony convictions and is not allowed to possess firearms. The gun in question was stolen. Once Richardson was released from the hospital, he was arrested on a charge of possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. What's dumber than I was cleaning it and it went off? How about I was stealing it and it went off? Let's remember Justin Richardson's name for future reference, shall we? Because this story could well be a Darwin File starter kit. Speaking of which, the bell tolls for the Darwin File.
I am the Grim Reaper. I am death.
A Chinese vlogger whose surname was Sun has died after reportedly filming himself swallowing poisonous centipedes and geckos alive. Sun was live streaming himself, carrying out the stomach-churning challenge, which he had hoped would gain him more online followers. The 35-year-old is said to have been found lifeless by his girlfriend when she went to check on him at his apartment. Sun had also been filming himself drinking large amounts of alcohol, as well as eating mealworms for the platform Do You, where he had 15,000 followers. As part of the stunt, he would spin a wheel marked with items including centipedes, geckos, mealworms, vinegar, eggs, beer, and bajiu, which is a clear distilled liquor. He would drink or eat the item the spin lands on in front of the camera. Sun collapsed while the stream was still being broadcast, and police later found his camera was still running when his body was found. Meanwhile, you may recall the story of someone else trying to eat a live gecko. 34-year-old David Dowell, described as a happy-go-lucky father, died in absolute agony after eating a gecko as a dare. Dowell contracted a salmonella infection after downing the lizard as part of a bet. Within days of downing the reptile, he was vomiting green bile and his testicles had swollen to the size of grapefruits, with a strange liquid leaking from them. Ew. The dad of 3's stomach became badly bloated before he died in December. I wonder if anybody doing either of these guys' eulogies are mentioning what morons they were, or are they towing the party line by saying that they lived life to the fullest? Either way, the tree of life is often self-pruning.
I have come for you.
Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Andrew Alleman is a podcast expert and the founder of PodcastGuest.com. It's a service that is a two-way street for both those looking to be guests on shows and those who are searching for guests. With the explosion in the last little while of podcasts, I thought it might be interesting to have Andrew on to talk about podcasts as a business model. He joins us on the line right now via Skype from Seattle. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. It's a pleasure to have you on. I should say, full disclosure, I've actually used your service, podcastguests.com, for the purposes of booking some guests on this show, so I appreciate your work in doing that for that reason.
Oh, fantastic.
Now, I think about podcasts, and I think back to the 90s when websites first started coming up. You had people who were early adapters who jumped on the website bandwagon and for either good reasons or bad reasons got a website. Then you had people who had no idea what a website was all about and didn't know why they should have one. And then there were other people who came along who said, I've got to have a website. I don't know why, but I need one. Do you find podcasting today is in that same situation that websites were some 20-odd years ago?
You know, that's an interesting take, or even blogs back in, say, the mid-aughts, right? It's everyone knew they had to have it, but they didn't necessarily know why at the time. And so when you look at some big brands, yeah, I think a lot of them are like, oh, we need to have a podcast. Everyone's doing podcasting without thinking through really what their purpose and their goal is.
Okay, so let's answer that question. From a corporate point of view, a company says, we got to have a podcast. You, as someone who knows podcasting and who deals in this business, what are the questions they should be asking as to why they need one?
Right. So I think they should think about what their goals are. And I think a big goal of any company is to connect with their customers. And a podcast is a great way to do that. Because right now, a company, when they connect with their customers, a lot of times, well, email is the most direct kind of push medium there. And people get a lot of email, right? Just so much that they can't keep track of it. And so podcasts are a way to have a long format discussion with customers, or interview customers on the program, even about how they're using their services. But I would recommend a brand actually look at it and say, how can we add value to someone listening to this podcast? There's so many podcasts out there right now. How can we teach them something that's not necessarily about our product or service, but something that all of our customers would gain value from?
Well, as you just mentioned, there are so many podcasts out there. So how does one, if they want to get into the podcasting world from a corporate point of view, stay above the fray and not fall into the noise of all the podcasts that are out there?
Well, the good news is that these companies already have an audience. And when you already have an audience that either is on your email list or checks into your website, you have a way to promote this podcast to them. Another thing that they can do there to kind of get people to start listening to their podcast is to give some sort of incentive, such as giveaways or great information, great tips that will help these people with their business as the consumer of this company.
There are various types of podcasts out there. You know, this particular program is a hybrid because it's a radio show that is also heard in podcast form. But that being said, there are podcasts that are informational. There are podcasts that are just entertainment. Do you delineate between those two as far as what your expertise is going toward?
Yeah, I would say I focus more on the educational side of things, right? And by education, I mean people teaching people about a new topic, how-tos, any sort of informational thing. And most podcasts out there these days follow a guest format, much like what we're doing right here, where you have a guest on the show who can teach the audience about a particular topic. So that's what I tend to pay attention to.
So what are the misconceptions some people have when they come to you about getting onto podcast or starting a podcast? What are the biggest misconceptions you find some people have about these things?
Well, I think people should start by being a guest on other podcasts to get their feet wet. It'll really help them understand if they have the voice to do it, if they have the media training to do it at this point, or if they need to work on other things. So I highly recommend people start as a guest. And then when people start a podcast, my number one thing to tell them is don't overthink it. I think a lot of people think, oh, I need to have a professional studio. I need to have a $400 microphone. I need to do this and that. And it's really not necessary to get started. Now, starting a podcast is a lot more work than, say, starting a blog at this point, but it's something that you can do for under $100, $200 from a startup cost perspective.
Okay, well, you mentioned blogs again. Going back to that day, is there a correlation between companies that have blogs and companies that are now doing podcasts? In other words, looking back, because hindsight's always 20/20. How successful was the podcast era? Oh, sorry, the blog era.
Well, I think it was very successful. I mean, I built a business around it, so obviously I'm not working for a brand, but I have a news site that I started that is in a blog format, and it's still, I started in 2005, so it's coming up on 15 years, right? And I think from a corporate communications perspective, it's also been valuable. A lot of companies communicate to their clients through a blog. They can go in-depth on conversations. I know I subscribe to a lot of blogs out there. And it's a good way, I think, to get good content out, but still people are reading things. They're maybe spending 4 or 5 minutes reading a post, which is very different from a podcast, which oftentimes is 30 to 60 minutes long.
You have the website podcastguest.com, as I mentioned earlier. Do you think there are people who shouldn't have a podcast?
Yes, I found that a lot of people start podcasting, realize how much work it is, and then stop. And so before I feature a podcast to my network, they have to have at least 10 podcasts under the belt, which isn't a lot, but I find that a lot of people give up before even recording 10 podcasts. And so you really need to think about what your goals are and if you're willing to do it on a set time frame. So if you have a weekly podcast, are you willing to really sit down, record the podcast, get them edited, go through all of that every week and deliver it in a consistent fashion to your audience? So I think it's more work than blogging. It's more work than a lot of different types of content. I'd say if people have done a lot of video, then audio should be fairly easy. But if they're jumping straight from written word media to spoken word media, they just need to understand a bit about what's involved.
I ask the question only because I use the analogy of people using podcasts as a way of, for instance, making money, because you have a lot of people out there who are saying either having a podcast will help your business make money or having the podcast itself will make money. And I think back to the days of the gold rush. Everyone went panning for gold, but they weren't the ones who really got rich unless they really struck it and were very lucky. The people who got rich were the ones who were selling the pans. And Levi Strauss, who was selling
the
jeans.
The picks and the shovels, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm just wondering, I asked that question because, you are someone who has podcastguest.com. Your theories on that, and I think you've kind of already answered that, because there are some people who shouldn't have a podcast.
Well, yeah, but specifically on the monetization front, I think a lot of people see successful podcasters that get maybe 100,000 downloads per episode, and they're selling advertising to these big brands and making a lot of money. You need to have a reality check. That's the hardest way to make money from podcasting, selling these ads to these large companies. The median number of downloads per episode in podcasts is about 200. So it's hard to get someone excited about sponsoring a podcast with only 200 downloads. So I recommend people to think about the value they're going to get from hosting a podcast differently. And that is, well, for example, one of the things is if you're hosting a podcast, you can invite people on that you wouldn't otherwise get to respond to you to have a conversation. So if I want to interview the CEO of a public company to learn something from him, if I just called him up and said, hey, can I talk to you for 30 minutes about this topic, they'd blow me off, right? They don't have time. But if I say, hey, I'd love for you to come on to my podcast and talk to my audience about your viewpoints on X, Y, and Z, suddenly I'm offering something to them, but I'm still getting what I want, which is a conversation with the CEO.
Well, speaking of guests, what are some of the mistakes podcasters make when selecting guests?
Well, I think it might be the other way around, which is just poorly prepared podcast guests, right? So whenever you have someone on your podcast, you need to be clear to them what your expectations are. Those expectations should revolve around sound. So, for example, a lot of people come on and they'll talk directly into their laptop on a podcast and it does not sound good. So you need to tell them you need to have a standalone microphone or a headset. And they also need to have earbuds so they don't get an echo on the sound. What I recommend to podcasters to do is go listen to at least a few minutes of that guest on another podcast or some sort of spoken word or video performance so that you can really see, hey, is this person articulate? Do they get to the point? and make sure that it's going to be a good guest on your program.
And we have just about a minute, so I'll give you the opportunity to make the pitch. Why should people come to podcastguest.com if they want to be guests on somebody's podcast?
Well, it's a great way to get connected with podcasters. I have guests that have been booked on dozens of shows by using the service. It's free to sign up at podcastguests.com. And I recommend everyone start by downloading a free guide I have at podcastguests.com/guide. It's completely free. You don't even need to give me your email address. And it walks you through the steps that you need to undertake, such as getting a good microphone and sound, putting together the best you to get in front of these podcasters so that they want to have you on their show and you get the most out of it.
Andrew, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you.
Andrew Alleman from podcastguest.com. As he mentioned, you can get a free guide about being a podcast guest by going to podcastguest.com/guide. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0519, and you'll find links to Andrew's site. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come, we'll talk about the 2019 trending words, plus we'll learn a little bit about homeschooling. There's an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and much more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts. Just click on the Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts button located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, employees got to work one Sunday morning at a Fort Myers, Florida car dealership and observed that a vehicle in the lot had incurred damage. Fortunately, Modern Auto Sales has surveillance equipment, says John DeLeonardo, who owns the dealership. So when we played the video, the last thing we expected to see was somebody falling from the sky landing on one of our cars. But that's what they saw. The young man had apparently dropped 20 feet from the business's roof. DeLeonardo says he got up there with the dealership's own ladder. It's not clear whether he jumped intentionally. The video shows him picking himself up and walking away after the fall. The incident happened in the rain, and police say that means there aren't any fingerprints. But they are investigating. And probably so are agents who represent Hollywood stuntmen. You know, when they do find this guy, they should gently remind him that airbags only work on the inside of the vehicle. And you know, sometimes a routine traffic stop, in this case for an expired license plate, is the most interesting incident in a cop's day. So it was on July 10th for Guthrie, Oklahoma police officers. At around 11 a.m., they stopped a car driven by 40-year-old Stephen Jennings, who had a friend, 30-year-old Rachel Riviera, in the front seat, and a timber rattlesnake in a terrarium on the back seat. Jennings told police he had a gun in the car at about the same time that they identified the car as stolen. Upon further search, officers found an open bottle of whiskey next to the gun. But this is not even the most interesting part of the story. They also found a container of yellowish powder labeled uranium. The uranium is a wild card in that situation, Guthrie Police Sergeant Anthony Gibbs explained. Jennings told police he was trying to create a super snake with the radioactive uranium. Charges for Jennings included possession of a stolen vehicle and transporting an open bottle of liquor. Because it was rattlesnake season, his valid hunting and fishing license absolved him of any charges related to the snake. Police are still trying to figure out what charges might be brought regarding the uranium. Okay, this is a car ride that's just a heap of trouble. Should the rattlesnake charge even be up for debate in this situation? I mean, the guy had uranium! And clearly he's no rocket scientist. Yeah. Okay, what's wrong with a grown man liking stuffed animals? Maybe nothing, provided they are his. Washington police officers found a man crammed into a giant box of stuffed animals when they responded to a burglary alarm at a Tacoma thrift store. According to Pierce County Superior Court documents, officers responded to the St. Vincent de Paul thrift store and found 29-year-old Michael Howell hiding in a box of stuffed animals in the yard outside the store. Howell reportedly told officers that he had smoked meth and then jumped into the box after he got spooked by the burglar alarm. Said Howell, "I came here for clothes and food, bro." Howell was charged with burglary and unlawful possession of a controlled substance. You know, if he wants stuffed animals, he should get them like the rest of us do. Spend hours with rolls of quarters trying to win one at amusement arcades. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, if you're going to make a spectacle out of yourself, you are going to attract attention. And there are few greater spectacles than over 1,000 naked people riding bicycles through a crowded major downtown metropolitan area. That's what they had in the city of St. Louis recently during the World Naked Bike Ride. But not all of the attention these buck-naked cyclists received was good, or even harmless. The annual bike ride, which is usually a happy event that celebrates community, bike safety, and body positivity, attracted more than 1,000 riders who pedaled through the city of St. Louis while letting it all hang out. It also attracted a man wielding a paintball gun. The participants are normally met with cheers and giggles from onlookers, but one man decided to use them for target practice. A video of the attack shows a man take aim with a paintball gun and open fire on cyclists. The 21-second clip even shows him walking closer to the bike path as they stream past, and he appears to unload at least 9 shots on the riders. World Naked Bike Ride Planning Committee volunteer Andrea Hitzman, well, there's an unfortunate name, told local news that none of the riders were seriously injured. Well, you know, when it comes to naked cycling, I've learned from experience, and by experience, I mean observation in covering such events for television news, not riding myself, that one of the most dangerous situations, at least for men riding men's bikes naked, is wet and or slippery pedals. Yeah, that'll set you free. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? We're more than halfway through the year, but already the front runner when it comes to the top trending words of the year is woke. That's according to the Global Language Monitor. Once again, we are joined by Paul J.J. Payak, the president and chief word analyst at Global Language Monitor. And he joins us on the line from Austin, Texas. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Peter. Good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you again as well. So woke is the number one word. How do you go about, first of all, for those who have not heard you on the show before, how do you go about justifying or collecting the information that ranks these words?
Okay, what we do is we use every database we can, and what we're talking about is global English, not American English or Canadian English, but what's going on with the English language worldwide. And what we do is get every database we can, and then we see what's moving inside the databases. Okay, so in other words, if we did what's the most frequently used word in the world, every year would be okay, right? Okay. That's the most frequently used English word in the world. But we're not doing that. We're talking about what's trending, what's making a difference, what's consequential in language.
Ah, you use the word consequential, which is number two on your list, but I'll get to that in a moment. Let's get back to number one, woke. Why is woke number one?
Okay, woke is interesting because actually someone said it's the great awakening, like the great awakening in Christian circles, like in the 1800s. the mid-1800s. And it is interesting because woke is almost a semi-religious experience where all of a sudden somebody has an epiphany and they're living a nice life, you know, in the university or whatever. And all of a sudden they're awakened to the fact that there's suffering in the world and social injustice. And so it becomes like a brand new experience, and people become very intense about it. And it's interesting because there's one difference between being woke in, let's say, the 1970s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, et cetera, that in the 60s it was about Vietnam, right? You'd wake up and all of a sudden you were woke to the violence of the war in Vietnam. And then as you go through the decades, you know, it's it was 60s, it was civil rights, Vietnam, then it was like women's liberation and things of that nature, the gay rights movement. I mean, people become awoke to different things as we go through history. But what's interesting here is that now we're judging the past as well as the present, okay? So if you say something about the American Civil War, okay, you actually have to, you think in terms of what could we do to eradicate the effects of the Civil War today? So, oh, there's a statue of General Lee who led the South's armies. And if there's a statue to General Lee, that actually shows that there's negative things about the Civil War still going on, so you remove the statue. Mm. And it's like this kind of unprecedented because, you know, remember when the in Afghanistan, when they were tearing down the great Buddhist statues, it's 300 or 400 feet tall, and the other sect came in and said, these are evil, they're bad, and so they eradicated them. And it was a great work of history that was lost, a great work of art. The point is that that's kind of what we're doing now. If we find out that somebody was a slaveholder at a certain period of time, then we have to make sure no mention of that person ever happens in a university or that type of thing. So that's the big distinction. Woke now extends into the past.
As I mentioned, number two is consequential. Why is that ranking so high?
Okay, consequential is a political term that's used. It's interesting because there's a bunch of political terms this year. And it's because of the political upheavals that are going on around the world, from the migrant crisis to right-wing governments in Europe to President Xi really consolidating his influence in China, et cetera, and Putin, you know, as it goes. And so there's a lot more political, Brexit, of course, okay, Brexit and all the things, and now Boris Johnson. So people are a lot more interested in politics this year, and consequential is the historical term. Like if you're a presidential historian or just a historian of governments, et cetera, the word consequence is like President Roosevelt had a consequential presidency. In other words, he started things that are still influencing us and still in play today. Margaret Thatcher had a consequential a prime ministership. I mean, she made differences that change things that are still in play today. And so around the world, you see things like that. So everybody, for some reason, political leaders became woken to the term consequential. And so now you notice it unless you really start thinking, how many times am I going to see consequential this week? And you see it embedded all these different times, like it's actually a political effort to make that what you're doing is consequential. It's not just something I'm doing on my whim or this is good or it helps me get to, you know, win re-election. No, it's something that's going to change the world, and it's happening on my watch.
Okay, so number one is woke. Number two is consequential. Number three, migrants, followed by opiates, collusion. Number six is a word, quite frankly, it might be trending. It's a word I've never heard before. Anthropocene?
Oh, yeah. Now, what it is that, well, everything's political in some way, right, this
okay.
year. And the Anthropocene is about climate change, et cetera. And what it says is that this is the first Earth epic, you know, like the Eocene and, you know, different epochs. The first Earth epoch that is actually affected by humans. And so Anthropocene means human, right? It means man. And so it means that this is the epoch, E-P-O-C-H, the epoch, when men start to, human beings start to influence the actual geology of the Earth.
Okay, but as you're saying, these words are trending. Where have you seen this word?
It's big in the news. It's big in the news when you see, again, it's kind of specialized, but it's big and getting bigger because there's a vote coming up among the global whatever, the guys that decide these things on if this is true or not. And so it's going to be more and more. It's a trending word that should emerge as the year goes on. Mm. Their thinking is that this started in 1950. Before 1950, humans had little impact on the world, the climate, the Earth itself. But after 1950, it's big enough to say it's like when the dinosaurs died out or whatever. It's a major change.
Now, people can
consequential.
people can see the entire list, by the way, by going to the website at languagemonitor.com. But I want to work my way down to number 20 because I'm just wondering if that's the highest place word that is actually commonly mispronounced, and that is gerrymander.
How does one mispronounce that?
Because the actual word is gerrymander because it's named after a politician in Massachusetts whose name was Gary, not Jerry.
Exactly. Well, I know you'd know that, Peter. You're the type of guy that knows all that stuff and does research. And so it is interesting, and it's big in the news because and this is a global phenomenon. You know, we're using it for the U.S. Because every 10 years there's a census. And in a census, you divide up the congressional districts according to population. And so since the beginning of the Republic, we have these things that look like salamanders, right? And you think it's okay. Let's say it's Boston. So you think there's a circle around Boston, and that's Boston. How foolish you are. Well, it might start in Boston, a harbor, and then wind its way up the Charles River, and then take a left over at some hill or something. And what it is trying to keep all people of the same ethnic background, economic status, and everything together. So if there's a low-income area where there's a minority representation, Democrats love those. And so what they do is they try to enhance them so as many districts in a state, whichever state they control, will be follow their party. And it's really kind of, people think we got to change it and this and that, but it's been there for 250 years, and we all agree it should be changed, but nothing ever happens that really makes a difference.
Well, we're just about out of time. I just want to ask very quickly, I mean, this is you came up with this list halfway through the year for the top trending words of the year. In the past, when you've done this, has the list changed radically from the time you do it at this time of the year to when you actually complete the end of the year?
Actually, it's like these words have some type of internal momentum, right? And they start gaining as it goes on. So in the end, out of the 20 terms, we'll still have 15 of them. And the top five may shuffle a little, but very rarely do we find something that pops up. It does happen. A big event, in October, November, whatever, then all of a sudden that shakes things up. But it has to be a really big event to shake the numbers up for the entire year, right? Because we're looking at cumulative totals and things like that.
I have to correct you from something you said earlier. You say I do a lot of research and I know everything. I got to tell you, I didn't know Anthropocene, so there you go.
Well, let me tell you, it's a consequential event, and so you'll be hearing more about it. You'll know a lot next time we talk.
People can find out more information by going to the website at Global Language Monitor, which is languagemonitor.com. Paul, thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Hey, and thanks for inviting me.
Paul J.J. Payak from Global Language Monitor. Again, you can visit their website at languagemonitor.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0519, and you'll find links to Paul's site.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that's now gluten-free.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about homeschooling. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way. And a few more Stuff File news stories here on the Stuff File program, which is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, a woman angry about getting cold fries at a McDonald's in Georgia showed her displeasure by firing a shot into the floor of the restaurant. 27-year-old Lillian Chantal Tarver faces charges, including aggravated assault, after the incident at a Garden City McDonald's. The owner of the fast food outlet said the manager was getting her new fries when the woman entered the kitchen and shot a bullet at the floor. The owner said he gave her a refund and she fled without her fries. The woman took off in a black Nissan Altima with police in hot pursuit. The suspect eventually surrendered. Now, this is just the latest example of fast food rage. In June, a Tennessee woman allegedly assaulted and shot a McDonald's manager with a stun gun because her order was taking too long. In an incident in Australia, a McDonald's employee was shot in the face with a fire extinguisher in May. Okay, full disclosure. I happen to enjoy McDonald's french fries, but I have to agree that nothing goes from roof of your mouth scalding hot to solid inedible railway spikes like a McDonald's french fry. On many occasions, I have asked staff to replace my fries because they were cold. Never, in any of those occasions, did I ever shoot anyone, taser anyone, or drain a fire extinguisher in their face. Some folks, like their fries, just need to chill out. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, when not just any old Motel 6 will do, check into the Haneda XL Hotel Tokyo near Tokyo's airport and ask for the superior cockpit room. Along with two beds, a bathroom, and a table, the room features a full Boeing 737-800 flight simulator that offers guests the experience of piloting a full-size jet. The room rents for $234 per night, but for a 90-minute simulator session with an expert, guests will have to cough up another $277. The simulator can't be used without supervision. So, we have a hotel room near the airport that anyone can book which features a Boeing jet simulator. Not to alarm anybody, but isn't this how terrorists learn how to fly? Yeah, anyway,
Let's get to our last guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program for this week, shall we? Whether you don't like your public school system, can't afford a private school, or have a child with special needs, homeschooling has become a viable option for many families. But should you and can you do it? Mary Wynn Lent is a grandmother who homeschooled her children, grandchildren, and children from her community for the past 30 years. She joins us on the line from the mountains of North Georgia. Hi, Mary Wynn.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me today.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, the thing when I looked up some information about you, you have an education or a background in education. A lot
yes.
of parents don't, and I'm sure there's a certain fear that they might not be able to give their child what they need if they are thinking about homeschooling.
Absolutely. That is usually one of the first things. In America here, we only have to have a high school education, particularly in Georgia. Other states may be different. So it's not always necessary that you do, and particularly for you or the parent, because they fear it more than even their authorities over them, for fear that maybe their concepts that they learned a long time ago are old-fashioned now. And how am I going to know all the new stuff? But there are many, many helps out there that can help you. And they don't feel academically or emotionally prepared for this undertaking. And so they need to be assured that they don't have to have an education degree to be able to do this. All the curriculums will definitely lead them in how to apply this to their child, and the stuff, the information we have today is just fantastic to teach you how to do it.
I think back to my own education in elementary and high school, and in elementary school, you usually had one teacher who taught you everything through the course of the day. In high school, teachers specialized. You had a history teacher and a science teacher and so on and so forth. So for the basis of that, I'm asking this question, and that is it more difficult to homeschool a high schooler than an elementary school student? Because just by what I said, high school tends to specialize as far as what teachers can offer students.
Yes, that is a little bit of a roadblock right there. But there is a Homeschool Legal Defense Association located in Virginia that can help you in all areas, particularly if you have a high school student. One of our children is homeschooling her five children, and one of them is in high school. And they go online, and through this organization, they have many, many courses that they teach from teachers that are adept in each of these areas, and they take an online course through that, and it relieves the mother from having to be, or the dad, or whoever does it, grandparent, relieves them from the stress of having to teach each of these subjects, and they have such a wonderful help online. They have teaching helps at this organization. They give you the homeschool laws for international stuff, too. They have support groups. They have Legislation Action Center, and they have also a channel and a newsletter that they send out. They will equip you in any way that you need to be equipped, whether you have a young child in elementary or whether you have a high schooler like you're talking about. But they should not fear having to teach these specialized subjects because they don't have a degree in them. They can go online and find people that will teach them these subjects themselves.
Now, when one goes to school, of course, book learning is the most important aspect of going to school. But another aspect that's important is social learning. So what happens to people who are homeschooled? Is there a fear that they might be, for lack of a better term, more socially awkward than kids who go to school because they don't have that constant
Interaction.
Interaction. Thank you very much. Interaction with other kids, the way you do in school.
That is definitely one of the things. When my husband was running for school board many years ago, when our latter two children were teenagers, they went to an outing where they had to speak for their dad as to what he was standing for in this election. And they spoke to many people that were older, younger, or whatever, and one of the ladies interrupted my daughter as she was very adeptly giving the little talk that about her dad as to what he could do in that election. She said, "Oh, but you can't communicate with older adults." But yet she was doing just that thing as she was talking to this lady. And there is no fear of that, because when they interact with their parents, mama, dad, whoever's doing it, and they learn to interact with older people as well as learning to interact with their siblings, which gives them interaction with younger people. And then most homeschool groups in your town will have outings where they bring them together. They even teach certain subjects like that together. They also have science fairs or any other kind of specialized fair that has to do with academics. And so you need to look up your homeschool, local homeschool associations, too, that can be found readily in your community. But that is a fear. But that is not a real fear that is true, because they're interacting with both sets of people all the time. And then if you are a member of a church or you are a member of an organization or whatever, they have much time interacting with other people, even in those realms also. Or sports. They go for sports activities, and they're still having a lot of interaction.
Okay, I mentioned that you homeschooled your children, you homeschooled your grandchildren. Why did you do it in the first place? What led you to homeschooling in the beginning?
Okay, what really led me to homeschooling? There are definitely 8 advantages in homeschooling. And my first advantage in that is to reinforce the values of our own family. When you send your child to a babysitter or a daycare center or a, you know, whatever you want to say, school of any sort, then they're learning the values of whomever is teaching them. But I wanted my children to learn the values of our family and practice those values in their life. So that is the first advantage there of homeschooling, is that someone else is not teaching my child things that maybe I'm not sure whether I want them to learn or not. So also it will revive your child's self-esteem, because many times in a classroom situation, children are beaten down by either bullying in the class or by just not grabbing a certain concept. So in homeschooling, you can either help them to grab each concept and spend the amount of time that your child needs on it, not just the amount of time the class spends on it. Or if your child is bored, then you can propel them on in other ways and zero in on their strengths also. And then we have to reawaken the love of learning, because many times they get bored in classrooms and they don't have a love of learning anymore. So this can be fired up completely at home. And recouping time for making memories. When they're in school, they spend so much time in school, and if they ride the bus either way, then that's even more time away from the parent. And so parents usually don't have a whole lot of time each day with their family to be able to teach them what they want them to know and to how to work with life. But when they're homeschooled, they've got all day long, then they can be able to take your child to make memories in the afternoon. And an example of this is when our second child was very beaten down at 12 years old. She had been in Christian school, but yet she wasn't feeling good about herself. And I started homeschooling her when she was 12, and I took her in the afternoons. One time a week, we went to a modeling school where she modeled, I modeled, and her younger sister modeled. We had so much fun making memories. We had time to do it because she wasn't in school any longer. So those are just some of the advantages that you do have with that, that help to mold your child where they love their parents again. Because many times when they're out in schools, they are with their peers more time each day than they are with their parents. So they bond with their peers more than their parents. This will help you, homeschooling will help you to bond more closely with your children. So those are just a few of the advantages there.
And these are some of the things you write about. You have written several books. People can find out more information by going to your website. Mary Wynn, I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And anytime I can speak of a whole lot of other subjects on homeschooling also. So thank you so much.
Homeschooler Mary Wynn Lent. Again, you can go to her website. It's at grandmatillyauthor.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0519, and you'll find links to Mary Wynn's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
An Indiana woman reportedly showed up for a meeting with a probation officer wearing somebody else's dentures. According to the Jennings County Sheriff's Office Facebook page, a woman reported her dentures stolen and said Joanne Childers had not only taken the teeth, but was also sporting the stolen smile. The same day, a deputy had a meeting with Childers in which he noticed that she was wearing dentures that were clearly not hers. Deputies located Childers at her home and spoke to her about the stolen teeth. While there, they reportedly spotted the dentures in question, easily identified by the victim's name written on them. Childers is facing theft charges. Now, why, oh why, would you think pulling a felonious tooth fairy move by stealing someone else's choppers to go to see your probation officer would be a good idea? Dentures which clearly aren't made for you and have the name of someone else written on them? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0519. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0519. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.